If the creek's been rising or the weather's coming up, or you found a little nugget or your horse has won the cup, put the billy on. Ring Macca. Australia's waiting for you.
That's Drew Forsyth. He's on the road with his little show, The Wharf Review. I spoke to him last week and we had a nice yarn. But Taylor, Tay-Tay they call her, is all over Australia. She's Australia all over, isn't she, at the moment? Anyway, give us a ring, 1300 700 222. Love to talk to you wherever you are, around the world, all over.
Want a hand, mate? Ring Macca. Someone will give it a go. If the Cooper's coming down, ring Macca. Tell everyone you're watching it flow.
Hello, Macca. Maurie Stack from Taree. I was listening to Don Spencer this morning, Macca, and I just wanted to say that his ACMF, the Australian Children's Music Foundation, runs its program in five of our schools here in Taree, and it's been remarkably successful. Kids just respond to his music, Macca. It's a universal appeal. And Macca, Don always says, and it's clearly true, that there's a great connection between mathematics and music.
Yeah.
Music's very mathematical in its the way it's set up, and you find people who are good at mathematics tend to be good at music too. It's a real connection between the two.
Yeah, well, you sing harmony in thirds and fifths and all that sort of stuff, and sometimes fourths. And Maurice, it's nice to talk to you, mate.
Nice to talk to you too, Macca.
Good
great
on
program.
You. Thank you. That was Maurie last week. We had a great talk, Maurie and I, not only about Don Spencer's music, but about towns and cities, I suppose, being bypassed as superhighways, freeways, snake all over the country. So, and he reckons Taree, one place, but that was about 30 years ago, I think it happened. But, he says they're doing fine. Good morning. Give us a ring, 1300 700 222. That's our number, wherever you are. Last Monday, the 19th of February, marked the 82nd anniversary of the bombing of Darwin in 1942, when 236 Allied service personnel and civilians were killed, and many, many hundreds more were injured, not to mention the devastation of the city of Darwin and ships in the harbour, etc., sunk. Just imagine, if you would, 1942. I mean, no, it's hard. It's a different time. No TV, no mobiles. Northern Australia, life is slow, laid back. Then, out of the sky, 188 aircraft come strafing and bombing. Imagine being on a ship in the harbour, sitting ducks. Last Monday, flags in Darwin and indeed in the territory were at half-mast from dawn until 12 midday. Maggie rang with a memory.
Hello. This is Maggie from East Brighton. I want to talk about my uncle, Doug Shelley, who was on the corvette HMAS Warrnambool during the bombing of Darwin, and Doug organised to rescue a wounded and dead, of course. And after the war, he was awarded a rare British Empire Medal. He had been on the Sydney prior to being on the Warrnambool. After the bombing of Darwin, he rejoined the Sydney and came ashore for shore leave here in Melbourne. And, of course, after it left Melbourne, it was bombed.
Dear idea, yes.
So, but he was a wonderful man. He died very young, 46, when Uncle Doug came back to my grandmother's house in Middle Park. We were all sitting around, you know, the family, kids, everybody. And he was telling us about it all. And he said the Japs were flying so low, we could have hit them with potatoes. I was about five or six, and me, five or six, said, well, why didn't you?
That was Maggie last week from Melbourne. Isn't that a great Australian? You never hear anybody say that. We could have hit them with spuds. We could have hit them with potatoes. 1300 700 222. Good morning. Yes.
Ladders,
we do.
Treats and boxes.
Yes.
We get sacks, sacks, sacks on email.
My correspondent, Jan Collins, wrote to me 30 years ago, but she's updated, and she says, Ian, about the pig, and you wanted to know what happened to it. Well, I did. The story was she got a pig, her son had brought it home and gave it to her, and she asked a friend to look after it, but the friend didn't want to look after it, so she ended up raising the pig. And the pig was called Snort. She raised Snort from a tiny baby to a 150-pound fatty, she says. She was the most gentle, cuddly pet I've ever owned, says Jan. We also had a blue heeler pup that my son gave me for Christmas. His name was Buff. And Buff and Snort were raised together and played and slept together. They were always chasing each other around the paddock, and they even played cricket with my husband and I after work. One day we were sitting under the awning when Buff, that's the dog, dropped the ball at our feet. We just laughed because we thought he just wanted us to throw it. When I stood up to throw it, I saw Snort, that's the pig, dragging the cricket bat along the ground in her mouth. She was so intelligent. I swam most days across the highway at the beach. If Snort saw Buff, that's the dog, and I walk past her pen with a towel over my shoulder, she would squeal and run up and down the pen in a tizzy. I felt so bad, so we used to take her with us. Buff was frightened of the salt water, that's the dog, so I put him on Snort's back and held him on until he got used to it. And ever after, that's how they were at the beach. Snort grew so fast over the next year. I was standing by the highway one day with Snort on a rope, waiting for the traffic to pass. Just as I was about to cross, a big semi came over the hill. The poor bugger nearly ran off the road when he saw me with a huge pig on a rope. One day we were at the beach having a nice swim with Buff on Snort's back as usual, when this man jogged along the beach. He must have been French because he was wearing a mankini. A mankini. Anyway, he stopped to watch us swimming and was right near our towels. Snort, the pig, saw this and chased the man all the way up to the highway. Luckily, he got to his car. She'd never done anything like that before. I had so many wonderful times with my two lovely pets. Then the Wicked Witch of Bowen came one day and took Snort while I was away, and I never saw her again. But I can only guess what happened to my beautiful pet, says Jan. Sad story. Jan concludes, it's wonderful to listen to what other Aussies are doing on Sundays. My favourite program of yours was years ago when you asked pilots to ring in. Pilots from Australia and around the world rang in. Why don't you start that again for tradies and all types of workers? I know my nephew would ring in a heartbeat. He's a computer programmer in Thailand, says Jan Collins. Thank you, Jan. Jan, I don't think we asked pilots to ring in. I think that might have been when the pilot strike was on. Remember Bob Hawke and the pilot strike and all that sort of stuff?
G'day, Macca. It's Bart here, mate. How you going?
Good, thanks, Bart.
That's the way. Macca, I'm just not far out of Dunedoo and headed down from Canamble. I live in Sydney, and just to let you know, Canamble's looking pretty good at the moment.
A bit of rain. You've had some good rain.
We have had good rain, Macca, yeah. We have had good rain. We're hoping to start sowing in about 4 weeks.
And you've been up there, or you're going up there, or you're going back to Sydney?
I'm going back to Sydney, Macca. Uh-huh. I was up there, and hopefully we sort of can hopefully get another, say, 25, 30 mil in the next 4 weeks, and we should be in a very good situation. For sowing, like, moisture profile will be pretty high.
Yeah, so you live in Sydney or Canamble?
I live in Sydney, on the outskirts of Sydney, near Camden.
Uh-huh. And what, you just commute up there, do you?
I commute up there, Macca. Yeah, I do. Yeah, we go up there. They've got a few partners. So a couple of the partners, they live on the farm. I've got a few workers out there. And, yeah, commute backwards and forwards. I sort of just go mainly when we're sort of getting pretty busy for sowing and harvests.
Well.
And, a bit of stock work. No, it's good. But the country's looking very nice, Macca. Looking very good.
Well, that's good. You've had this place for a while, or?
My partner was born and bred there. And we've sort of jumped on board in 2017 when it was probably looking a bit of a bad, hard time at that time with the drought. We sort of done a few years without no crops. But in saying that, Macca, it was actually probably a good time to buy land because it's gone through the roof now.
I'll say. Yeah, well, it all turns around, doesn't it? But remember the drought. Remember the drought. God, you can't remember it, can you? But it'll come again. It'll come again.
I hope not, Macca. We need a good year this year. We need a very good year. We were sort of a bit unfortunate last year. We sort of never got the rain at the right time. So pretty much we got rain pretty much at sowing, and the crop had no in-rain crop, pretty much.
Yeah.
So we didn't get much out of it last year, but we're praying to God this year we get something half decent because, the expenses are so high.
The cost of everything. I can just imagine for you, for diesel and all that sort of stuff and everything you buy, hay or whatever you got to buy, it's through the roof.
I tell you what, Macca, farming, especially broadacre farming, I've done a veggie farming most of my life, so I'm sort of, I was always in farming, but I've never done broadacre farming since 2017. And it's just, yeah, it's a very, very tough gig. Very tough gig. And I can see how a lot of farmers struggle with mental health and things like that, because financially there's so much pressure on you all the time.
Oh, I'll say it's and the cost of land, as you say, is just ridiculous.
I don't know
how you can grow up and want to buy a farm. It's just, you know, it's not going to happen.
Well, the way we've done it, Macca, like there's four partners involved, and I'd be totally honest with you, I don't think you could do it any other way these days.
Mm.
You know, by the time you buy your farm, buy your machinery, you know, and infrastructure, sheds, it's that expensive. You couldn't do it on your own.
No, exactly. All right, Bob. You know? Well, good luck.
No worries, mate. First time listener, Macca. Very excited to listen to you, mate.
Oh, good on you, Bart. We'll see you in Coonamble sometime. I sometimes go up to Coonamble.
Yeah, that'll be great. That'll be awesome.
See you at the bolo.
No worries. Thanks, Macca.
All right, mate.
Have a good one, mate.
Yeah, good on you.
Hey, gang, Macca. It's Hamish here from Darlington. The guy that was talking about the droughts in history by the sand, a similar study was done where they drilled ice cores in the Antarctic.
Yeah.
And they found that, it was about a couple thousand years ago or so, that there was droughts that they matched the dust from Longreach in the Antarctic ice, and there was droughts over a 100-year period. There was a 30-year drought, a 15-year drought, and a 10-year drought.
Wow.
Due to the layers of the dust from Longreach in the ice.
Isn't that amazing? That's what Raymond McLaren reckons. He says he doesn't know if he's right, but he says we ain't seen nothing yet in Australia in terms of drought.
Yeah, that's right. And the data, I tried to get the data from the universities involved, and they wouldn't release it because it would affect their funding for all the climate change rhetoric that we're getting now.
All right.
If people knew that what we're experiencing now is not dry times. We've got a lot worse coming our way.
That's what Raymond says. Who knows? But he's got the little crinum, the little plant there, and it's a swamp lily, and he plants it in Tamworth and doesn't water it, but it sort of survives. But because it's been through, he reckons, millions of years, and it's been through droughts, and its DNA is not the right word, but it's got all that backup, and it says, oh, well, we've done this before. We can do this. We can do it again. So they live through it.
When I was about seven, there was an old guy called Jimmy Beaton who used to tell stories, and he was the 70s when I was seven, and he told me in our area there's a dry time every 5 years, there's a drought every 15 years, there's a bad one every 50, and there's a worse one every 100. And I don't know how his history was, but he'd seen a lot of them, and since he's been dead a long time now, but since I'm in my mid-60s, and he's right.
Yeah.
We've had that sort of sequence over and over and over again.
Hamish, you've got to fly soon, but what are you on your tractor at the moment?
Yeah, on a tractor doing some crop preparation.
Oh, that's the way. What are you planting?
This will be oats. So we're organic operation. It'll be organic oat crop.
I'll see. And you live in Darlington, Hamish?
Yep, Western Vic.
I'll come and see you sometime. I will.
Sounds good.
All right, mate. Good on you.
See ya.
We'll talk drought. See ya. Anne's somewhere near Canberra. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Macca. Can you hear me?
I can. Very well.
Great. Thank you. I'm on the road to Wagga Wagga.
Uh-huh.
And we're gathering this morning for auditions for our youth ballet company.
I see. Travelling around the place? Where are you based, Anne?
Yeah, so I'm kind of based in Canberra, but do a lot of work across in the Riverina. And every year we do auditions for a company to perform a ballet in Wagga.
Uh-huh.
And we've got kids driving in from Leeton and Cootamundra and Junee and all around the local area, all heading in this morning to audition for their parts.
Isn't that interesting? See, if it's not in your ken, you don't really think about other things, do you? As I've always said, if you're an engineer, you walk around looking at buildings and bridges, but you don't notice much else. And here you are. Now, is a lot of young girls and maybe boys interested in ballet?
Yeah, there are. And so what we try and do is create opportunities for kids in the country so that they can do these things rather than having to move away and do it at like Sydney, Melbourne, that sort of place.
Yeah, huh?
So we try and give them the professional experience in the country. And then some, like we've got one girl who's she's performing with Opera Australia next month at West Side Story in Sydney. So she's come through our program. And then, yeah, she's going to be on stage doing that in March and April. So you just never know where it's going to take you. But having said that, we want to be able to provide it for the kids in the country who just want to do it for fun as well.
Yeah, and so you put on a performance somewhere, and what do you do? Swan Lake, or what do you do?
Well, we've done the classics, you know, Capalia and Nutcracker and all those sorts of things. This year we're going a little bit sideways. We're actually doing Cats as a ballet.
Oh, right. Okay.
So something a little bit different. We've been doing it for 10 years, so we're working our way through all different. We try and keep it different and give them variety each year.
Yeah.
But they'll come in today, and then they'll do their auditions. Then in a few weeks we meet again, and they do a professional photo shoot, and then we have mentoring program where the older ones mentor the younger ones, and it kind of goes across about 6 months, and then they perform in September.
What's the age group for ballet, and what's the age you need to retire? Because it's pretty physically demanding, isn't it?
It is. It's physically demanding, but these days it's adult ballet is a real thing, and it's become a thing that people do up to, you know, up into their 70s and 80s.
We do a
program called Silver Swans through the Royal Academy of Dance, and there's no limit. There's no age limit.
Wow, there you go. So these young girls, from what age this morning? From what, 5 or 10, 6 or something?
So we teach them from 4 and 5, but for this experience, we ask that they're 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we have girls and boys, and they all work together and grow quite a community together over the 6 months of the program.
I'll bet. So that's in Wagga today, is that right?
It's in Wagga this morning, yes.
And what's it like on the road this morning?
Look, it's clear. I'm just sort of heading towards Murrum Bateman, and I can still see some of the full moon from last night, so that was lovely.
Uh-huh. Nice to be out in the road early morning. Watch out for ruse and stuff, yeah.
I'm not usually this early on the road, but last weekend I did go early because I went and saw Taylor Swift in Melbourne.
All right. What was that like?
It was like a Broadway show.
Really?
That's what I thought about it. It was all very theatrical.
Yeah.
But the thing that I loved is the fans in front of us all moved around their seats to have the shortest person in front of our shortest person in our group.
I always reckon the best part of any concert or a football match is talking to the people there. You know, I mean, I can't watch anything for more than 20 minutes. I get bored. I'd get bored with Elvis after 20 minutes. But the people the people around you, endlessly interesting, endlessly.
That's what makes it. And the girl there selling the hot dogs, she said to us, it was louder than the grand final.
Wow. So, yeah, it was a big crowd. Big crowd, wasn't it?
Huge, yeah. We were there for the 96,000, and the MCG was shaking.
Good luck, Anne. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much. Lovely to talk to you, Macca.
Bye.
Hey, Macca, this is Paul. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Paul.
I saw your surf boat halfway across the Nullarbor Plain during the week when he was coming back from that competition.
Oh, they were at Lawn, yeah, the surf rowers thing at Lawn last week. You saw him towing the... Oh, isn't that good? You should have beeped him or something or said g'day.
Well, it was funny because it's the middle of Nullarbor and I went, there's a surfboard. They must be expecting a bit of rain out here.
No, well, they just got on the... it was the... what were they called, Kel? The secret paddlers or the secret... something, yeah. So they're from Secret Cove in Perth, and they decided to tow their surf boat over there to all the way to Lawn, and then they went in the comp and then drove back on Monday. What are you carrying, Paul?
Just equipment back to Sydney.
All right,
from Perth. There
you go. You do that run often?
Yeah, work for a nice young couple in Brisbane and do a Brisbane, Perth, Brisbane usually.
Gee, that's
every couple of weeks.
A Oh, good on you, mate. What's it like out there this morning?
Mate, it's a big country. It's a great country. It's and like that girl said before about being around people.
Yeah.
People make this country.
Exactly. Good on you, Paul. Thanks, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.
Good morning, Macca.
G'day.
It's Peter here. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, mate. I only just caught the start of you. I've just jumped in the vehicle. The fellas who went across to do the rowing, you know, they went on a bit of a road trip to pick up their mates and what have you. And I just thought how quintessentially Australian and witty that a group of males out to have some fun and they called themselves the Secret Strokers. And yeah. I thought, what a lovely little double entendre there, which may go over some heads, not others. And you think, isn't it just, doesn't say something about how witty and, you know, the yeah, just their nature, you know.
Exactly.
They don't take it too seriously, you know. And
exactly. Yeah. And they left, you know, and it's a big trip. I mean, just bang, straight over. Then they've got to row for 3 days and competition.
Yeah,
and,
oh, yeah.
And then pack it up again and then drive back with their, and then go back to work sort of thing. But great adventure.
It's big. And when you know that you've got work, that you've bookended that trip with work, you know, it's a thing, Macca. If you're doing a big trip and you know when you get home, you can put your feet up for a month. It's not bad, but when you know you've got to come home and clean the van out, do that you've got to do, go to bed and get up and go to work again, it's you have to put yourself out quite a bit to do that. And it just, yeah, it really is just something that makes us, it just keeps you alive and keeps you going. And could you imagine the conversation and the witticisms and that was shared on the way over there, you know, between a bunch of bikes like that.
Exactly. And they're excited too because they only got in the comp at the last minute because one other team pulled out and so they decided to do it. There's something, and I'm not a surf, I've never been involved in a surf club, but there's something about our culture because I was listening to an old program and somebody was complaining about Australia didn't have any culture. Some people had come to Australia, wrote an article. And I think our culture, it's not so much we've got, the Sistine Chapels and stuff and all the art and stuff from Europe, but there's something really unique about Australia because we're far away and the sort of, you know, they talk about mateship as if it's, but it's something, mateship is just
it's
a word.
Valued.
And it's involved in, and when you think about surf boat rowing and surf life saving, it doesn't really, I know it happens around the world, but not like in Australia. We've got surf, you know, all around the coast. All around the coast we've got surf and we've got people who do that sort of stuff. And there's something about that whole culture that's very Australian, very, very us, speaks to us about.
It's reflective of the way we live our life. Like I've heard people say about the Aussies, the old-fashioned Aussie's gone. He's not. If you just put yourself out there, I'm in the truck industry and I bump into a lot of old types, you know, and they're still there. They are still there, Macca. And I go to Europe quite a lot and I'm in London quite often. And in South London, I see the same thing. The South Londoners, they group together and they just know each other's witticisms. They know each other's sense of humour. And they're proud to be part of that little microcosm that they are, you know. And I see it in Australia too, you know. The more you hang around with old-fashioned types, and I'm 65, but, you know, the more you get like them, and my young bloke now is 35, 36, and he said, Dad, he said, I just want to be like you. He said, I just want to mix. I said, oh, careful what you wish for. But he likes to hang around with my mates now that are my age, and more than blokes his own age. He said, I can't be bothered, Dad. They're just full of rubbish all the time, you know. And he said, I just want to be like Poppy, my dad, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I don't know. But, I just thought their name was just a little titter, you know.
Yeah, and Paul, who is driving the truck, he's coming back across the Nullarbor. And sees they go past towing the boat. He says to himself, well, that's the mob who rang Macca up from Lawn last week, which is really nice.
I go across the Nullarbor routinely, and you can see somebody at the going through Adelaide as you leave Adelaide, and you'll see them, and then you'll stop and do something and load or unload, and then a day and a half later or whatever, you'll be coming back, or 2 or 3 days later, come back, you'll see the same bloke on the push bike, and he's over near Ceduna or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyway,
Pete,
I won't hold you up anymore, Matt.
No, you're right, Pete. I just want to, you've got fires around you, haven't you, in Ballarat?
Yes. Yeah, there were some particularly nasty ones a couple of days ago, Macca, and I was en route to the northwest. I wasn't going far, I was only going to Adelaide. But yeah, they were just off to my right, and they'd only just reopened the Western Freeway at that point. But
and you've got some bad weather coming, too. There's some more hot weather on the way, I think.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah, I'll be outside today. I've got a day outdoors today, but yeah, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'll probably be doing some studying under the cooler, I think. Lucky me. Yeah. Yeah. Oh well. Yeah. But yeah, those fireys. They my partner Anne, she was with Kevin Butler on his inaugural Blaze Aid thing. She went and worked with him up in up in the north, the high country, and yeah, she's a country girl, and she's got the greatest respect for the firefighters, and yeah, she just it's in her blood. She's a bush girl, came up in the bush. I did not, but she did.
Good on you, Pete. Good
luck.
Good
on you. See you, Mac. Bye.
Thanks, mate. Bye. Bye.
Yeah, Mac, Barrick, how are you?
Yeah, good, Beth.
Mate, just a quick one. Just travelling back from Moranbah back to Newcastle. You're talking about school food that you remember fondly.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I used to like going to school for the food.
That's right.
Because it was sort of food you didn't get at home. Mum was fruit and meat and two veg and all that sort of stuff. But you'd have cream buns and stuff. Well, that's what and pineapple
that's right,
donuts and yeah.
Anyways. And real vanilla slices.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now the one I liked the best was a salad roll with a sausage roll on it. We called it a Bruno.
where was that at?
Maris Brothers in Newcastle.
Right.
It might have been a Catholic thing. I'm not real sure, but anyway.
A Bruno. Yeah. So what do you do? What are you travelling for, Barry? What are you doing?
Work. Yeah, work. I'm just heading back from Moranbah. We do work up there in the coal fields in the ammonium nitrate plant that makes the stuff that moves the dirt to get to the coal.
Explosives you're talking about?
Yeah, explosives, yeah.
So ammonium nitrate. You drive up to Moranbah, to Newcastle?
Yeah, I do regularly. My guys fly, but I usually bring a lot of other gear, so I tend to drive. So, yeah, have a road trip every few months, so it's not that bad.
Yeah, so, yeah, well, and how's that going? Busy as ever?
Yeah, everything is. I mean, we're probably busier than we've ever been in the last few years. So it's exciting, but it's very tiring when you're working all over the place. So yeah.
Yeah. What's your particular skill, Barry?
We do a whole host of things. So it's usually better if I just tell people we do stuff, because it's a bit hard to explain.
No, well, you can tell us a little bit about it.
We do industrial valves. So we do. Isolation valves, control valves, safety relief valves. We do all the mechanical and electrical aspects of all that. So, yeah, we do stuff.
Yeah. And how many people work? You work on all sorts of mines, do you, or just one?
No, we do mainly, we do everything. So we do food and beverage, coal, water and wastewater. We're across all industries. So every industry's got valves.
Yeah. And you're a busy boy. So you're just travelling back now.
Yeah, just went past North Star, and the little cafe you were talking about many, many weeks ago was just opening for business.
Out of Tamworth?
Yeah, out of Tamworth, yeah. Oh, no, North Star.
Moree, sort of Moree. Yeah, Moree way. Yeah. But up that way, yeah.
So anyway. All right. Yeah, so just, righto, mate. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too, Barry.
And remember that Bruno. Try one.
What is a salad roll with a... Sausage roll.
Yep.
Well, yeah. All right. Good on you.
Okay, mate. See ya.
See you, mate. Bye. This is the All Over News. It certainly is. And I'll tell you a story. I was driving along the other day, pulled up at the lights, and there's a truck next to me, carrying all sorts of stuff, you know, how they, things were strapped down on their trucks. It was a long tabletop. And I looked out the window and it had a sign on it. And it said, to deliver to Lovell Springs, and had an address somewhere in Newcastle, and I thought, Lovell Springs? So I thought, that's a sign, it's an omen. It's an omen. And I thought immediately of Simon Crane, and he's my guest this morning, because I know he's always doing stuff that you'd like to know about. Simon Crane, good morning, mate.
Good morning, Ian. I'm back again.
Back again. You've been travelling. Where have you been?
Well, I was persuaded by my better half to have a little holiday in India, and we decided to drive across India. Now, most people choose not to drive in India, and we can talk about that later, why that would be. But we went with friends. Each of us had our own car, each couple, and we thought we'd give it a go. How bad can it be?
Because I remember talking to you many years ago, and you've been to India before. You used to do business, or you have done business with India, haven't you? It was electronics or trains?
No, I used to sell Lovell stuff in India, and I found it pretty hard going. And I have to confess, about 12 years ago, I gave up on dealing with the Indian Railways, which is the biggest single employer in India with over a million people.
And it'd be about the biggest single railway system in the world, wouldn't it?
It is. It carries the most people every day. And it has a lot of rolling stock, and I thought that would be a great market for us. But in the end, I put it in the too hard basket for a whole lot of reasons I'd rather not go into. Yeah. And I didn't think about India much until my Alison said, I think we need to go to India and let's drive across it. And so that's what
when
I've just
When you say
done.
Drive across it, what's that, from east to west or
we
north
went,
to south?
Yes,
or what?
We went east to west and also in a slightly downwards direction.
Uh-huh.
So we started in Chennai and we finished in, which is in the Tamil Nadu on the east coast.
Yeah.
And we finished up down near the bottom on the west coast in the state of Kerala in a city called Cochin, and probably not as well known as Chennai, but yeah. So if you're interested, I could tell you a couple of things.
Yeah, I was going to say, when did you come back?
It was about 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that gives you time to think about what you've done, doesn't it?
And yes. And
what have you come up with?
Well, the first thought was, driving in India, is it actually statistically dangerous, or is that just a myth?
Well, you hear about the cities and everyone on bicycles and tearing around and all that sort of stuff. But
is it actually dangerous? Well, they do kill 150,000 people a year. And now if you extrapolate...
You're kidding me. Really?
No. If you extrapolate Australia's road toll, which, you know, as we know, is not great, but it's we're working on it. Their road toll's about three times ours. So it's up there. But, you know, we're undaunted by those numbers. We thought, no, we're going to give it a go. And we set off. So we were in Indian-made cars. And I'd like, if you are interested, I could talk to you about Indian-made cars. Mm. So we're in a Suzuki, a small SUV. They don't actually sell them in Australia, this particular model. And it was great. It was absolutely state-of-the-art.
Mm.
And once we realised that they have a totally different philosophy of driving, which is more involves common sense than Australia does. It really, rules are not the critical thing. What is critical is that you keep your wits about you, you concentrate all the time, and you use your common sense. Actually, we never really had a moment at all.
Did how many k's or miles?
Look, we did a couple of thousand. And we did, and it's slow. You're not getting far every day. You're probably averaging 40 kilometres an hour because we weren't on, you know, freeways. We're on the back roads of India. But we had one collision with a bullock cart, and we had in fact stopped, but the bullock just kept coming. He eventually...
Was he booked?
No, but the driver looked at the bullock cart driver, looked at me and gave me a beautiful shrug of his shoulders as if to say that just it wasn't my fault. This bullock kind of does what he wants to do. And I'm sorry about the dent in your car. And I gave him a shrug back and that was the end of it. We didn't bother exchanging license plates or anything.
I remember a lady rang us from Rocky, and she'd been to India, and she said, I'm going back again, Ian, because it was just life-changing, amazing. And the other thing was that during COVID, she's talking about a little town where they were weavers. I think they were spinners and weavers, but something like that, and it decimated that whole town. a lot of people died, and she wasn't sure that that would industry in that particular area would come back. It's an amazing place. I mean, I haven't been to India. I just hear about it all the time. Tell me, you're India.
Well, it's certainly different to the north. So, you know, we're in the south of India. We only went to two states, so it's Tamil Nadu and then Kerala on the left-hand side on the west coast. And I have to say, firstly, it's very beautiful. It's a more relaxed pace than the north, which I found somewhat, it's full on the north of India. It seemed to be much less densely populated. The people just generally go about their lives at a much lower pace. And it's beautiful and quite mountainous. We went right over the top of the mountains where a lot of tea is grown, so that was lovely. So it was nice to get up into the cool for a little while because it's warm, but actually compared to Australia, it's cool. Mm. We found India, compared to the summer we've just had, it was not unpleasant in any way. But I guess let's talk about more meaningful things. The folks were absolutely lovely. We never had a moment's stress. And I think it's a thing that a reasonably competent Australian driver could do. I'd probably do it with friends in another car. You don't have to travel in a convoy, but you could meet up every night. That's what we did. We met for dinner every night at 7 o'clock in the next hotel, and we made our own way at our own pace, and that was good. And you know, it's an incredible mobile phone system in India, so you can always ring your buddies and say, "Help, we've just blown a tire and come and get us." I just think it's a thing that Australians could consider. You don't have to travel in India by bus or by bicycle or by train. A good Australian driver who's prepared to concentrate, and that's the important thing, you can never, ever relax.
Take your mind off what you're doing.
Because they're coming at you from the right and the left and straight ahead all the time. And you just cannot, doze off and expect that the rules of the road will save you from what might happen next. So there we go. I just think more Australians should give it a go.
Now, you're in India, and I hear all the time that India is the new place. It's the happening place. It'll overtake China. It'll overtake everyone and now I know you've been there before and you've done business and you're back there again and you've had a look around. What's your impression of that?
So it was 12 years since I'd been there last, and admittedly, I'm in a different part of India now. I'm in the south. It still had the feeling of a waking giant. It really did. There's a couple of things I'd like to tell you about. One in particular, which really struck me, as we drove into the outskirts of Cochin. So this is our last port of call, and we're on our way out of the country after that. I noticed that they were building an elevated roadway, a four-lane elevated roadway over the top of the road we were on. And I remarked, that's a big enterprise. But what struck me was, and it appeared to be about 15 kilometres long, what amazed me was they were building the whole thing at once. They didn't start at one end and work their way to the other end, or start at both ends and work their way to the middle, like we're doing at Snowy Hydro 2. They're building the whole thing at the same time. Every single hole, every single support, the whole lot is going up in one go. And I'd say in 1 year, the whole thing will be finished.
Now, was this being built by China? Because in Africa, like one of our correspondents from Kenya, and he said, he came back to Australia and the Rosehill interchange of work was terrible. He said, over there, he said, they've got freeways and they're being built by China. Are the Chinese building the Indian?
No, Indians are absolutely building their new infrastructure, and they're building it at incredible speed.
Wow.
And what I notice, because I'm kind of in this industry, is they're building it with equipment built in India. So they're not using Chinese equipment at all. In fact, I mean, as you probably know, Ian, China and India don't get on absolutely brilliantly. No. They share a border, and they've got about 50,000 troops.
They
shoot at each other. So I don't think the Indians are inviting the Chinese to build their roads for them. No, they're very capable of building their own stuff now, and with equipment built in India. That's what really struck me, on a massive scale that for Australia would be inconceivable. because they've always had the manpower,
yeah,
but they never, I don't think, had the capital equipment to do these sorts of massive projects. Well, now they do, they've built the equipment themselves.
And it seems to me that Indians are very tech savvy. They're when it comes to the internet and all that sort of stuff, they've got a whole coterie of tech savvy people that do all that sort of stuff.
Well, we could hardly find anywhere that didn't have, you know, really good mobile phone and internet connections wherever you were. So the whole place is seriously wired. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the car we drove.
Yeah.
So I think I mentioned it was a Suzuki.
Yeah.
So Suzuki, as we most of us know, is the smallest Japanese car company. Mm. You know, it was a real minnow when 40 years ago it decided to have a go at building cars in India in a joint venture with the Indian government. And it was a bit of a leap of faith for Suzuki. They were really a very small company that made very, very small cars, which suited India at the time. So here we are 40 years later. What has that got Suzuki? So in spite of all the efforts of all the biggest car companies in the world to muscle in, nearly half of all the cars built in India are still built by Suzuki. It's now not a joint venture. It's 100% Suzuki owned. But that's taken over 40 years. So, and it's over half the cars Suzuki built in the world they now build in India. So that's 40 years.
Mm.
And what struck me was that's the sort of long-term commitment that no Australian company would ever take on, ever. In fact, I think if you did in Australia...
And is that regrettable?
I think so. I think we're the world capital of short-termism. I think we invented it and we're still the world leader. And the Japanese, when you look at Suzuki, quite a small company 40 years ago, they just decided India's a bet that we're prepared to take. And even if it takes us 40 years... we'll get there in the end and we'll have a good business. And you sort of admire them. And what's interesting is that Indian people, they appreciate the loyalty that Suzuki gave them to hang in all those years and to risk that money that they spent on their first factory. And now, as I said, half of Suzuki's cars are made in India, and it turned out to have been a good deal. But it took a long time, but they hang in there, and that's what we're not so good at.
I'm talking to Simon Crane, and I'll continue to do that, but it's sort of heartening in some ways because you look around the world, and I'm not a particular fan of the Chinese Communist Party, and you look at Mr. Putin, I don't know why somebody doesn't do anything about him. But India seems to be, you know, they seem to be friendly and sort of, they may be the new America, I don't know, because America seems to be, I don't know. But anyway, did you get that feeling quickly?
Well, it is a democracy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really good start.
That's a plus.
It's a massive plus. And not, you know, the other one isn't of that size.
Yeah.
Look, I had a good feeling about India. And, you know, they like Australians for some weird reason.
Because we play cricket.
I guess actually the cricket was a massive... That is a massive link we have that
exactly.
Must not be
Shane
underestimated.
Warne. We love Shane Warne. Brett Lee. They love Brett Lee. Even Mr. Waugh goes over there. Steve Waugh goes over there. So, yes, it's cricket. That's yes. My guest this morning, Peter Joseph. Morning, Peter.
Good morning, Macca.
Simon Crane. Good morning, Simon. Simon's been to India. Simon, I was just thinking, there's lots of Indians who've come to Australia to live and they're doing all sorts of things. They're hard, you know, they're hard workers. I mean, that's the thing I notice about them. But I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking, is there many Australians who go to India to do this, you know, to forge a new way, go west, young man? Do you go to India? Is that a place you'd advise us to go or to go? Or what's the deal?
I think the answer is no. I don't think there are many Australians working in India. Actually, just on the subject of Indians in Australia, so the state of Kerala, the moment we crossed the border, we noticed a very large number of brand new, very big, comfortable houses, the likes of which you would normally see in Cherrybrook in Sydney, sort of McMansions. But we're talking thousands of them. And I couldn't understand how the economy could pay for these. And I made various inquiries.
As
and
you
eventually,
do.
Eventually, someone said, well, what you'll notice is those big houses, there's no one in them. And I said, well, I did notice that. There was not a single living soul in these thousands of beautiful, comfortable, brand new houses. And I was told that's because those people live overseas. Wow. And they have sent money back to Kerala. And that is why Kerala is so wealthy, because there's no industry in Kerala. Keralans are the most literate. It's the most literate state in India. And a huge number of them live overseas as professionals. They're in IT, they're doctors, and they send money back and they build these houses in absentia. And
to go
that's where they're going to retire to. So mm-hmm. that's a phenomenon that I'd not heard of before.
That happens a bit here in Australia, doesn't it? I mean, that's what one of the complaints is about, why there's no accommodation for people and rental accommodation, because people have built houses here and they leave them empty. They don't want people to live in them. So I'm not sure if it's what the scale is here. And indeed, it sounds like it's a large scale in Kerala.
Kerala, yes. And it's become a very wealthy state on the basis of expatriates sending money from overseas. So that's just a little sideline.
So the building industry in India is booming, of course, obviously.
It is, and they don't have a labour problem.
No.
So can I talk about one place that most Australians, I think, would not have heard of, I had never heard of. So it's a city of, I think, 1.5 million people, which makes it the 88th largest city in India. And it's called Madurai. And it's on a plain. It's not exotic looking from a distance in Tamil Nadu. And as you get towards the centre of the city, you realise there is something enormous in the middle of it, because rising out of the centre of the city are four, my late father would have called them, giant ziggurats reaching skyward.
Ziggurats?
Ziggurats,
what's
yes.
a ziggurat?
It's like a religious, it's a religious monument, but on the scale of a skyscraper. So what it is, it's a thing called the Meenakshi Temple, which is famous in the Hindu world, but we're not aware of. And frankly, it makes the Vatican look like a country church. It is a Hindu temple on an industrial scale, and it's actually the size of a small city. It's a kilometre square, and it rises about 15 stories out of the ground. It's carved out of solid granite. And inside it, you could fit 500,000 people.
And do people, commute there?
We queued to get in. Now, you're not allowed to take any cameras in, and non-Hindus are not allowed into the inner sanctum, the innermost sanctum. But we were allowed to visit 80 or 90% of it, and it is worth seeing. Now, I am not a man of spiritual nature, but I have to say...
I think you are.
A couple of hours in this temple, I was starting to think I need to change my ways. This was
Well,
amazing.
That happens. Apparently that happens to us as we get older.
Yes. So there was a...
Start to see the light or whatever.
There was a temple-wide PA system which was playing a Hindu chant the whole time, like a low drone. And after a while, it got into your head, and a number of our friends sort of had a quasi-religious experience in this place. One of them, in fact, prostrated himself on the ground in the middle of the temple, overcome with the spirituality of this place. And I'm not joking here.
No.
It was really something. And I think if Australians were going to travel in southern India, they should reserve a day to go to Madurai.
And how long has that been built there? Is that
it's about 1,500 years old.
Oh, wow.
But it's just got bigger and bigger. They just keep adding more layers of granite. The whole thing is carved from solid granite that's been brought from who knows where, probably 1,000 kilometres away. It's on a scale that is unimaginable to Western eyes. If you sort of stack the Vatican, every major cathedral in Europe, stack them all together, they wouldn't be as big as this thing. It's enormous. And on the day we were there, there were probably, it was a quiet day, I'd say there were 100,000 people inside queuing to get into the inner sanctum. And
it's quite amazing, isn't it, really? It's a very spiritual place. I don't know anything about it, but the Ganges and all that sort of stuff. Yes. There's stuff. Yeah.
So that was a big deal for me, and I'll never forget it. Oh. And I think more Australians should go to Madurai.
Madurai, there you go. Peter Joseph, have you been to India?
I have. I have. It's a great place. Mm. And agree with everything that Simon just said. I'd love to go there. Aren't any temples down in Antarctica, by the way.
No.
But that kind of quasi spiritual experience is very evident. It's very humbling for the reasons I mentioned earlier. And you do get a feeling of something far more powerful than us, namely nature, which, you know, just you realise the preciousness of the planet and the responsibility that we all have. And I dare say it's the same kind of idea.
Yeah, I don't know where you go with all of that, because I think the more people we get, the more rules there'll be. It's like when you go to America and you can see, you know, Yosemite National Park, and it's all, you know, people are queued up along the roadway because, I mean, you know, it's because they've got to protect it. We've got to protect those places from ourselves. And I don't know, we can do lots of things. We can put people on the moon, but we don't seem to be able to control the number of people in the world, and they're coming by the millions a day. I think, I don't know what it is, but that's just another problem for another thing. But when you go to somewhere like Antarctica, and you don't see any buildings, and very few, and cars, and
You get to do something called a polar plunge, which Kieran's probably done that.
Well, if he hasn't,
you know all about it.
If he hasn't, he will. Speaking of, and as I said, Simon Crane, this is about the time we do. Well, I should play it, really, shouldn't I?
We found this lovely house.
Whereabouts?
Just a little way from town.
We bought a beachside unit.
We're travelling right around on the Wallaby.
It's our home among the gum trees, and if you've got the time, I'll tell you why I live where I live. I'll tell you why I live where I live.
I still basically live where I've always lived. I travel a fair bit, so I suppose that keeps you, keeps the gypsy in you available. And I suppose my two guests, Simon Crane, who's just come back from India, and he travels a lot, and Peter Joseph, you're a traveller, Peter Joseph. If ever, you've rung us from all sorts of places around the world. Does that keep you...
Hotel.
Yeah. Because you get a bit bored in the same old house all the time, don't you? You need to get out. You can't sort of... You know, your same little quarter-acre block or whatever, even if you live on a, you know, 50,000-square-mile place, it's something. But you both live in Sydney, but you're both travellers, aren't you? Seasoned travellers, really. Simon Crane?
Seasoned, yeah, it sounds like something you're about to put in the oven.
Yes, it does.
Well-seasoned. Look, I am slightly nomadic, but I live with somebody who's a very... skilled homemaker who has kind of built a nest for us, and I think I've decided, look, that'll do.
I think this will do. That'll do.
We've pretty much made a pact. We're going to be carried out in a box. Mm. So,
but a trip to India and stuff that keeps you. You can't stay. You've got most of us, I think, like to travel. You know, the older you get, you can't do travel as well.
I've got a confession. Mm. While this show's been on, and you've been talking to Peter and others, I've actually. We're going sailing in Scotland. Now, as a little boy, I was sent to a school in Scotland, and it was a terrible school, but it owned a yacht which had been donated to the school, and I spent most of the time I should have been at school on the yacht.
How did you work that?
Off the west coast of Scotland, and that is an amazing place. Well, I'm going back as of about half an hour ago.
Really?
So there we go. With Alison, yeah, we're going to go for a...
See, I'd like to go to Scotland because I've got a lot of antecedents and stuff.
Yes, McNamara. Well, I'm half McEwen, so we're probably related.
Yeah, somewhere like that. But Scotland just appeals to me with kilts and stuff. Stuarts and things like that are in our family, so I'd like to go to Scotland. So, Peter Joseph, you're a Sydney dweller too, but you do a lot of travelling, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a Queenslander married to a West Australian, living in Sydney. We've been here a long time. And just love the place. And a bit like Simon, I'm married to Nettie.
A homemaker.
It's absolutely that. And we bought a house in Northwood, one of the smaller suburbs in Sydney. It's a very well-kept secret. We don't tell anyone where it is.
Yeah.
And same thing. I said to Nettie, you can take me out of here in a box. And it's family, it's friends. For me, it's the ocean, anywhere where there's water. places like Manly and Cabbage Tree Bay is one of the most wonderful parts of the planet
yeah.
to swim and engage with nature. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And what about the... what are you saying, Simon?
Cabbage Tree Bay.
It's Cabbage Tree Bay.
Have you just made that up?
No.
Someone did.
No, that's a place. Yeah.
Where is
it?
Oh,
it's like swimming in an aquarium.
Where is it?
It's you go to Manly Surf Club. I should be there now, but I'm not.
Mm.
And you swim around to Shelley Beach through Cabbage Tree Bay.
Okay.
And you'll see blue gropers. If you're lucky, you'll see the odd shark and fish and marine stuff, which will take you out of there feeling a hell of a lot better than when you get in and you know, don't stop talking about it, drinking coffee at the surf club.
Yeah, but you're happy living where you're living, and you've lived there most of your life, haven't you, both of you? No, you haven't lived. You lived in Newcastle for a while, didn't you?
No. Look, I've always been a Sydney lad, my family been here a really long time, 180 years now, I think. And I my kids show no signs of moving on. So I think we're. But it's nice to get away every now and then and go to somewhere like Madurai and
have a
quasi-religious experience.
Yes, just like Antarctica with Pete down there. I haven't done a lot of travelling at all, really. Haven't done around Australia. I have been here and there and everywhere, but not overseas really very much.
Simon and I can organise for Macca Tracks to go to Yeshiwa. And you can do the show from the end of the world.
Oh, this is in...
I think it'd be a great place to do a show.
Who am I going to talk to, Pete, down there?
Lots of people. No, you're shy. There are lots of lovely people. The South Americans are great people.
I'm thinking...
Argentina is it's a bit of an economic basket case. You look around there and you say, wow. Chile's a bit the same way, sadly, but they're beautiful places, beautiful people.
Acquaintance of mine, when I say young bloke, probably in his 40s, went with his wife and his dog, and they've gone to live in South America, up in the Andes or somewhere, because they wanted to get out of Australia, didn't like Australia for whatever reason, so they've gone to live in South America full time. That's it, boom, gone. And living in a village, and that'd be a different time, wouldn't it? You know, Bolivia and those sort of places, they're almost like Antarctica, aren't they, in some ways? Everywhere you go and there's a different culture, it's like a different planet, isn't it? People are different, they've got different... Is that right, Simon Craney? Simon's
I'm
looking
not
quizzical.
Sure. So I've just spent a little bit of time in South America, in Peru, and my daughter dragged me to Argentina to go trekking in Patagonia. And I thought Argentina actually was really like Australia.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful. It's big. It's largely empty once you get out of Buenos Aires. It was fantastic. But, yes, they're in terrible trouble economically, terrible trouble.
A lot of the world is. As I once said years ago, that Australia was surrounded by basket cases in terms of look at what's happening in New Guinea. But everywhere you look around the world, I I despair about what I see around the world, but it's no good worrying about it. No good. You just got to get on and do the best you can and hope for the best and don't get depressed about it. Peter Joseph and Simon Crane, thank you for coming in. Last time Simon was in, he said, we're building a city the size of Adelaide every 2.5 years. That's why we that's why we don't have any manufacturing. Is that still the case, Simon Crane?
I think so. Mm. And ironically, I mentioned that to someone whose daughter was doing a PhD in economics, and she's now based her thesis on that bizarre concept.
You're an influencer. That's what I've always said. I've always said you're an influencer.
Hey, Macca, it's Penny.
G'day, Pen.
Me and my mum are currently driving on the Hume Highway, and my grandparents are your biggest fans who told me to call you up to talk to you about Taylor Swift.
Well, tell me, you went there, when did you go?
We went last weekend.
Oh, right, in at the MCG, was it?
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh.
And was.
Go on, tell me.
It was amazing.
And how old are you, Pen?
I'm 14.
14, and I think there was, from memory, 96,000 or something there?
Pardon?
There was 96,000 there or something, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was 96,000 people.
Whew. And did you buy all the, you know, all the paraphernalia, the T-shirts and backpacks and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a T-shirt and a jumper and we got some merch for some friends.
Right. So, Penny, so you went with friends and tell me about you and Taylor Swift. What's the deal? How long have you been a Taylor Swift fan?
Oh, forever.
No, you haven't. No, you haven't.
Yep. Well, I don't know. I just love her music. Her lyrics are just so, like, they just appeal to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very relatable for any teenage girl. And she just, like, empowers women.
Uh-huh.
Amazing. Yeah, I love it.
That's good. And you don't hear a lot of it. Well, it depends where you listen, I suppose. But most of the audience are what? You're 14, is that right?
Yes.
Most of the girls between, what, 12 and 20 and their parents, of course, their mothers. And.
Yeah, well, there were some kids who looked to be, like, 10 years old.
Yeah.
There was very, very little kids there, kids of all ages. And I went with my auntie and my sister and my mum.
Uh-huh.
And we all enjoyed it so much.
And what song, what's your favourite Taylor Swift song?
Wonderland in Clean in the 1989 album.
Wonderland in what?
Wonderland and Clean from the album 1989.
All right. So, and you've been listening, so you're 14.
Yes.
So you've been listening to Taylor since you're about 8 or 7 or 8 or something.
Yeah. And I made about 23 friendship bracelets to give out to everybody at the concert.
Oh, wow. Well, isn't that that's a nice thing to do. Then the people, because as I said earlier this morning when I was talking about that, the nice thing I like about going to concerts or indeed football matches when I go, and I don't go a lot to football or to concerts, but when I do, I like to engage with the people around me. You know what I mean? It's always nice to see where they come from and what their deal is. I went to a Bob Dylan concert about 10 years ago, and there was people there from all over the world. And they say, oh, look, I've been to 47 Bob Dylan concerts, and I've been to unbelievable stuff. So they've got a story in themselves. So I hope you sort of did that at your Pink concert. You did, obviously, with your bracelets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was people from everywhere. Some people came from Hawaii to go to the concert.
It is, isn't it? I mean, people have compared it to the Beatles. I'm not sure if it's Beatle-ish in terms of when the Beatles came, say, to Adelaide, and people were just lining the streets and watching the cavalcade and the motorcade. So that's a different sort of thing. But nobody can sort of match the crowds of Taylor Swift. She's only played Melbourne and Sydney. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
So people people have come from all over Australia to Melbourne and to Sydney. There was people from Wodonga here, and I met people from Brisbane, and you know, just talking to people, and they're wheeling their little ports around the place, and the price of, isn't it funny how the price, you know, you get a motel room or a hotel room that's $300 or something, and as soon as something like this happens, it's $800.
Yeah, prices went up very high.
Where do you live, Penny?
We live in a small town called Baruga.
Uh-huh. That's.
We're driving home from the Pink concert.
Oh, you went to Pink as well?
Yes.
And how do you compare Pink and Taylor Swift? They're a different sort of feel. Are they a different vibe?
Well, Pink's more acrobatic, whereas Taylor Swift was sings more.
Uh-huh. There you go.
But Pink was like flying over the stadium and fireworks, and it was amazing.
And Taylor Swift, it's very, all these concerts, as I said, when the Beatles came, they just stand there, they got their amplifiers and they jump about and stuff and shake their heads and stuff like that and shake them, which was a big deal then, but basically that's all. Whereas concerts like Pink and Taylor Swift, from what I've seen, there's sparklers and, you know, explosions and all sorts of, it's a very visual thing too, isn't it? Very visual.
Yeah, Pink brought on her daughter as well to sing with her.
Oh, right. How old's her daughter?
Same age as me.
14.
Yes.
So, Penny, what's left in life now that you've seen Taylor Swift?
Schoolwork.
All right. What school do you go to?
Scott School, Aubrey.
In Aubrey. Oh, yeah, I know Scott School. I played there once years ago.
Really?
Yeah, they've got, they had a big auditorium there. Oh, they still probably do.
Yeah, the Chapel Hall. I'm a boarder there.
Oh, are you? Right. There you go. So, and you'd be in year 9, would you?
9, yeah.
All right. Well, maybe one day for you, Penn. Do you play the guitar or anything like that?
I play the piano.
Oh, that's even good. I wish I'd have played the piano. I love the piano. I love the piano. So keep at it, Penny.
I will. Hi, Macca. How are you going?
Good, thank you.
My name's Rebecca, and I just thought I'd call in and tell you a little story of mine, mm-hmm. because you've been part of my journey for most of my life. I grew up in a little town called Elliot in the Northern Territory, which is probably 2 hours out of Tennant Creek, and we didn't have good TV reception. All we had was radio, and my father was a mechanic and he serviced the whole region, and we would only listen to you in the 80s on a Sunday, and we would have people gather around for tea and coffee and biscuits, and it was really nice. And it's actually, now that I'm in my 30s, I'm thinking about the decisions that I've made, and I've bought a caravan park when I was 30 in the middle of South Australia in the beautiful wine region, because I love hearing those Australian stories. I love people waking up and you can go caravan to caravan and listen to Macca. It's been such a huge cultural, it's been really lovely. And I wanted to say hello to my father in Bowen, the mango country.
Oh, yes. Well, we were talking about mangoes the other day because I just noticed that, you know, we haven't got any Kenzo Prides this year. Well, I haven't seen them around. They're probably around, But Kensington Pride were always the best, I thought, but I haven't seen them.
Well, we don't get them. Well, we get them here, but at a very high cost. We used to have mangoes falling off the trees. It was actually terrible. we took it for granted growing up because it's really where that humidity hits Elliot, and you have beautiful beautiful mango trees. Yeah.
Yeah. So Elliot's on the highway, isn't it? I've been through Elliot. I think I've stopped there.
Yeah, it is. And we did School of the Air. Mm. So we were always on radio, you know, which was interesting. And then we went out to Newcastle Water Station School, which was really nice. We did that for a few years and spent a lot of our time in the tow truck.
So where are you this morning? You're at your caravan park, are you?
Yeah, I'm in Padthaway. We're just out of Narra Court where the caves are. There's only a couple of hundred people in this town, which I love, but we're lucky we get to visit. We get lots of visitors here and get to see the families and the new fancy caravans. And, you know, when people retire, you really get to see them at their best.
Mm.
And I just love it.
And we're just we're all just getting up our mobile homes, aren't we, in caravans and just doing it. It's, the number on the road is just exponential. The number, say, in the last 10, 20 years, unbelievable.
Yeah, and they're very happy people too. I mean, except when they're backing in their caravans. That's something to be admired. But generally, yeah, people are living their best life. It's so nice that, you know, you don't have to stay in one place like you used to. You can take all your amenities with you and, yeah, it's a really nice environment. And we're not a big four. We're just gardens. We love our birds and, you know, we love the wildlife. We're right next to a beautiful conservation park. So, yeah, a little bit different.
It sounds like a lovely life. And you grew up in Elliot, but you're now living in Pathway and... yeah, what you said you're thinking about your journey. What do you think about your journey?
Well, I've thought about how I've always chosen small towns, but in a role where I'm able to speak to lots of people, particularly people in their happy. I'm a happy person generally, but, yeah, I've been thinking about the small towns I've chosen in my life. And Pathway, although it's on the other side of the country, is very similar to Elliot. We have beautiful lakes and... lots of people just, you know, supporting their own community. We kind of live in isolation. If something needs to be done, the community does it. It's really lovely.
Well, Rebecca, when I'm next round you in Pathway, there used to be a horse called Pathway, didn't there? I remember when I was a kid.
There was, yeah. Yes. Yep.
Next time I'm round the place, I'll call in and say good day, okay?
Lovely.
I'm writing it on your list. Good on you, Beck. Nice to talk to you.
See you, bye.
See you, bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.